The What I Watch Tonight Show.
Morning, afternoon or evening, wherever you are on this planet, and welcome to the first ever episode of Comicasts from What I Watch Tonight. My name is Matt Hudson, and joining me is my most excellent co-host.
Hello everyone, I'm Jared Charles, Editor-in-Chief at the Borough Reviews.
Jared, how on earth are you?
I'm doing good, how about you?
I'm good. We are operating in different time zones, as is the norm nowadays. I am residing in the Matt Mansion, or the Matt Cave, in Essex at 10 o'clock in the evening. Whereabouts are you again?
I am actually in Lincoln, Nebraska, so right now it is a little after 4.
4 o'clock in the afternoon, I was probably quite bored at work, so I'm quite happy it's an evening over here.
Oh yeah, you get some time after, you can kind of relax for a little bit and then just go straight to bed. I still got a full night ahead of me.
Well, I'm going to do this, and then I get to go to bed, so I get to talk some films before I go to bed, which, as nerdy as this may sound, is a bloody good thing. Whereas you actually have now the afternoon to talk about films, and then you've got a whole evening to go and do whatever you want. So I think you actually get the better deal.
It's very possible. It's very possible.
Well, as the title may suggest, this show focuses solely on the capes, the makeup, the spandex, and the drama of comic book movies or superhero movies. And each month, Jared and myself discuss a different movie from the decades of choice, and we're going to deep dive right into it. So without any further, Jared, can you please reveal the movie we will be reviewing for this first episode?
Of course. So today, I thought it would be kind of fun to talk about the 1992 Batman Returns, directed by Tim Burton, and starring Michael Keaton, Danny DeVito, Christopher Walken, and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Just the pussy I've been looking for.
What do you want?
Ah, the direct approach. I admire that in a man with a mask. All I want in return is a chance to find my mom and dad.
I am Catwoman. Hear me roar.
If you have an iota of human feeling, take me instead.
I don't. So now.
Power surplus, Bruce. Shame on you. No such thing. One can never have too much power.
You gotta admit, I played this stinking city like a harp from hell.
Be gentle, it's my first time.
What did curiosity do to the cat?
I'm no cat.
Just relax. I'll take care of the squealing, wretched pinhead puppets of Gotham.
I don't know about you, Miss Kitty, but I feel so much yummier.
I have a name. Oswald Cobblepot. Still, could be worse. My nose could be gushing blood.
Mistletoe can be deadly if you eat it.
But a kiss can be even deadlier if you mean it. The thought of busting Batman makes me feel all dirty.
It's time for me to ascend, to reemerge.
What does it say? And Bruce Wayne, why are you dressed up like Batman?
Because he is Batman, you moron.
Merry Christmas, Albert. Goodwill toward men. And women.
Batman Returns sees the return of Michael Keaton's Batman when a corrupt businessman teams up with the Penguin and a Red Triangle gang to take control of Gotham City. Batman must determine the best route of action to stop them. However, issues arise when Catwoman enters the mix-up with her own agenda.
I'm really glad you picked this film, because with all of the, how do I say, I don't want to say formulaic, but with the kind of glossiest comic book movies that have been released in the last decade, very good films, might I add. Batman Returns almost seems like a complete opposite of what we're getting nowadays. So this is, I think, this is a really, really good film to start with.
It really is. And, you know, the fun thing is about Batman Returns, especially, is there's so much to talk about. It seems as if with a lot of the comic book movies that we get today, while they are good and very entertaining, you know, there's not typically a whole lot to pick out and talk about as far as themes go and everything like that. And with this one, there is a plethora of those things.
And there's a lot of themes which is, you wouldn't be able to put in, maybe other than Deadpool, you wouldn't be able to put in any comic book movies nowadays and get away with it.
No, I was, you know, it had been a while since I watched this. And on this viewing, I actually forgot how intense some of this stuff actually was in this movie.
Yeah, when I rewatched it for this show, I hadn't seen it for, probably shame on me, about 10, 15 years, a long time. So it's almost like rewatching it again. And some of the things I thought, bloody hell, that's some of the themes and some of the things that certain characters are saying and acting, how they're acting, it caught me off guard somewhat. And at times it made me feel a bit uncomfortable. However, that may be because I'm so, you know, in tune with this new breed of comic book movies we're getting.
And I think that's what it is. It just came as a shock to the system, you know. Mm-hmm. I experienced the same thing. You know, I had completely forgot about how almost crude this movie can be sometimes.
Yes.
And just the way that Batman's portrayed here is different from what we've seen just in recent iterations as well. So it was really a joy to rewatch.
Yeah, and for everybody who's just heard the sound clips we've put in, it wasn't meant to be mostly crude, but most of the film, but a lot of it, focuses on the cruder, vulgar aspects of life. So that wasn't a choice for humour. That's just what the characters are saying. What you're saying about Batman is true. I loved Michael Keaton's interpretation in both films, but especially in this film as well, because he is given a lot less to do.
Yes, and that's something that we haven't really seen before. Mm-hmm. And I had completely forgot about that. There is entire chunks of this movie where Batman is missing.
I think it's the first 35 minutes, he's barely in it.
Yeah, it's the first third of the movie that really, but I mean, even if you think about it towards the middle, I mean, really, what has he got to do? He's got a few things to do, but it seems like the focus is still on our villains.
Yes, which, and I know we're going to get into the villains properly later on, and I think I've read that Michael Keaton actually requested that his lines were taken out of the film because partly because he knew he just couldn't compete with the force of nature that the villains were, but also because it gave Batman that kind of brooding, almost kind of Darth Vader-like presence where he's in the background somewhere and he's used when necessary.
Yes, and you know, along with that, Michael Keaton also asked for a significant pay raise with this movie as well.
yeah.
So he was kind of reluctant to return, but I am definitely glad that he did. He is actually one of my favorite Batmans that we've had.
Yes, I think the more I rewatch those films with him in, I like him as an actor anyway. I'm a huge fan of Keaton as an actor, but and I hope that isn't swaying my decision. But the more I see him, the more he is Batman to me, and it might be because they are the first Batman films I saw, other than those horrible follow-up films. So Keaton is kind of the first Batman I ever saw, so I see him as the character.
Yeah, exactly. And this movie particularly, I think, was the most I'd ever watched Batman growing up. Like, I've rewatched this movie probably several times. As were the other ones, you know, Batman Forever, those movies I only watched once. This was a movie that I kept going back to, and I vividly remember going back to it several times throughout my childhood.
Well, that's probably a good stepping off point for basically what did we think about the film? What were what were our impressions of the film? And I am going to be a perfect gentleman, a perfect Alfred, and let you go first. What did you think about the film, and what are your overall impressions before we crack right in?
Yeah, so my overall impression of the film, like I said, it was kind of a shock to my system just rewatching it again. You know, I picked up on several new things that I completely missed when I was growing up. Obviously, there are some dark themes in here that are still relevant today. We're still talking about these things today. Like we already mentioned, you know, Batman is you know, in the background for a lot of the film. And I feel like that really speaks to the movies that we get today. It's almost like the exact opposite.
Yeah.
And that's why it felt so refreshing to me, I think, when I was watching it again, just because I don't remember the last time when we, you know, actually Infinity War might be the first movie, you know, in this new breed of, you know, comic book movies that like focused a lot of its attention on the villain. And, you know, I just can't, you know, speak to it enough about how fresh that felt.
Yeah, I certainly agree about Infinity War. I also think that there was more of a emphasis to focus on the villain because he'd been hyped up so much. But I certainly agree that the fact that the title character, Batman, it's not silly to say he's barely in his own film, but it works. In terms of the film itself, I appreciated it. There were parts which didn't work for me, but on the whole, I was entertained by it, if not, like you say, slightly confused, because it's a lot different to how I remember. But on the whole, I thought it was pretty good. I loved the way it looked. I loved that opening shot, which I think we're going to get into shortly as well. The opening sequence is hauntingly good.
It really is.
Yeah, Michael Keaton is great. The Danny DeVito, Michelle Pfeiffer, Christopher Walken. I can't say anything particularly bad about any of those. But I just think that some of it was a bit too over the top for my liking. Mm-hmm. But I mm-hmm. certainly agree that it does feel very similar to modern times. I thought it was pretty good. That's what I can say about it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, for me, that over the top kind of threw me out of it. You know, there were a few dialogue moments where I was kind of taken aback by, mm-hmm. just because I completely had forgot, almost, you know, all of the lines of dialogue in this movie. And, so yeah, I can say that there were a few of those that did take me out of the moment. But again, it was very purposeful. So yeah. It's not like they were, you know, it's not like they were trying to do something, you know, super serious and failed at that. They did exactly what they set out to do.
Yeah, you can't imagine a lot of those lines being said in Christopher Nolan's iteration of the character.
No, not at all.
This is pure Tim Burton. This, the way the film looks and the way the characters are with each other and their sort of kookiness. This isn't a movie that was made for the mainstream. Even though it's got Batman's name on it, I couldn't say this is a mainstream movie, if you know what I mean.
It's really not. And, you know, a lot of the people that I talk to that are just, you know, casual, like, moviegoer fans, my friends, for instance, would not ever want to watch something like this. So, you kind of have to set yourself up for it going in. But like you said, what Tim Burton's able to do, it does feel like a Tim Burton movie. But also it feels like a very different movie than we've seen, like any other superhero movie, you know, setting be in. For instance, you know, you have the whole themes of like corporate power and even some of the shots, you know, with the neon lights on the streets and stuff. It feels very neo-noir. It's kind of dark and it's gritty. Yeah. And you have these themes, you know, that are used in, you know, a lot of the cyberpunk shows and movies that are coming out, Blade Runner 2049, just this overall theme of corporate power and greed. And I thought that, you know, for a film that came out in 1992, I was pretty surprised that that movie tackled such a serious subject that's still so relevant today.
Yeah, it's some good foreshadowing from Tim Burton, because you have the Felix the Cat, the big symbol that Max Schreck's company uses, which is just dominating the skyline other than the skyscrapers and, of course, the bat symbol. There is a lot, yeah, like there is a lot flowing through it, because when you look at the film, you see the penguin as the villain, but really Max Schreck, which is Christopher Walken's character, he's the kind of, I think, the puppet master, because he's essentially manipulating the Penguin into doing his work for him, so he can then obviously overtake Gotham City and siphon the power away. So he's kind of working in the background, like a lot of these apparent evil conglomerates do. They send people out to do their work for them. So there's a lot of great themes in, and also Tim Burton, I've read as well, and I have seen the film with the Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, but he's examining those themes of expressionistic works and the way the characters act, the way it's shot, and the way Gotham was portrayed has this kind of strange, ethereal, gothic look to it. And just adding in the snow and the Christmas festive period, yes, it's just this fantasy-like, ethereal feeling to it. And it's like being in another world.
It most definitely is. And you kind of touched on it right there, but the whole Christmas setting for me really was the icing on the cake as far as, you know, setting goes. That really set the stage, you know? And I feel like, you know, had another person directed this movie, not saying that it would have been bad, but if they would have been going for the same thing, I don't think it would have worked as well because of Tim Burton's touch that he put on this movie.
Yes, it's. I don't think I need to go into Tim Burton and how we've created this movie. I think if you look at a Tim Burton film, you know it's a Tim Burton film without even knowing it's a Tim Burton film. He just has that visual, and he's got, I don't know what on earth goes on in his head, but he can create some strange-looking things, but they're also beautiful to look at. It's dystopian and as strange as Gotham looked. It has this weird beauty to it, and none more evident than that superb opening scene.
It really, yeah, that the opening scene for me was probably the strongest portion of the film, if not the strongest. You know, the way that they were able to set everything up into motion, I thought was done in a way that was effective for the characters going forward.
Yes, and they managed to get Pee Wee Herman in as well, Paul Rubens, and a little cameo at the beginning. But the way Danny Elfman's score plays over the scene, basically, the penguin has been born, he eats a cat from his cage, Oswald Cobblepot, sorry, the baby, and the parents are sent, they walk him through the snowy Gotham City and throw him off a bridge into the river so he can make his way into the sewers. Basically, two parents killing their child is the opening of this film, which is dark.
Mm-hmm. It's very dark, and that sets the tone going forward.
Yep.
Because, again, we talked about how Batman was different. Batman's killing people in this movie,
yes,
you know? Not many, but he is killing people in this movie, and he is not feeling bad about it. He's smirking.
Having a good time.
Yes. And, you know, I feel like the way that Gotham was, you know, set up here, it was supposed to be this kind of claustrophobic, dark place to be. And, you mm-hmm. know, everyone's going through hard times. There's a lot of things happening. And, you know, you have the, you know, giant umbrella of the corporation over the whole city that kind of masks all that stuff.
Yes.
And, you know, they're looking towards like entertainment, and they're looking towards Max Schreck, the head of that corporation, as kind of their leader going forward. Not even the mayor.
They call him Santa Claus, don't they?
Yes, yes, exactly. So they're like idolizing that. And that speaks to the whole movie, because the whole movie kind of does glorify violence.
Yeah. Who would have thought the owner of a multinational conglomerate would be an evil bastard? Not me. But, I mean, just quick, but that character was originally meant to be Two-Face, Harvey Dent. That were the first draft. I'm not sure if it's filmed, but the first draft, I think it was, had Billy Dee Williams reprising his role as Two-Face. But Tim Burton ultimately went back, scrapped that, and replaced him with Max Schreck. And I love Billy Dee Williams, so part of me would have loved to have seen him actually get given something meaty to do. But yeah, the Schreck character was brought in later on in the process. And I guess if you're not going to have Billy Dee Williams, you're going to get Christopher Walken. And wow, what did you think about Walken in this film?
I know for some that Christopher Walken in this film is kind of, I've heard out of place before, but I didn't get that feeling at all, just because of how the other characters are established as well. It's not like he's the only one that's over the top and everything like that. So I felt that he was perfectly cast, actually. And, you know, now looking back on it, I couldn't see another person stepping into that role.
Yeah, it's not like a Rita Repulsa in the recent Power Rangers film, where she was in a completely different film.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And also, speaking of cast, how did you feel about Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman?
Should we keep it clean, guys? I thought she was fantastic. I genuinely do think she is brilliant. Jokes aside about the suit and how she looked, I thought she was just had this sort of zany, crazy, kind of sexy bitchiness to her, saltiness, which worked so well in the context of the film and for the character. And, I mean, some of the names of which were apparently, you know, rumoured to take the role. Gina Davis. Meryl Streep was apparently considered, but she was too old, according to Tim Burton. Mm-hmm. Raquel Welch. Annette Bening got the job, but she fell pregnant, I believe.
Yep, she did.
Yeah, Meg Ryan, Kim Cattrall, Kim Basinger, however you say her surname. So there's so many people, but again, maybe it's just a beauty of hindsight, but Michelle Pfeiffer just is Catwoman. And I know that she, growing up, she idolised the character of Catwoman, so this was kind of her, at the time, her childhood dream role to play, and bloody hell, did she do a good job.
She really does. And it's, you know, funny because you look at, you know, the Catwoman starring Halle Berry, and I just don't think for me any Catwoman that we're going to get, even, you know, the Christopher Nolan trilogy, that Catwoman I felt was bland for me. There has not been another Catwoman iteration on screen that we've gotten that has been as powerful as Michelle Pfeiffer. And I think part of that is because of Tim Burton's focus on the villains. So, I mean, it helps, you know, when you actually feel something towards the villains, you know, you know where they're coming from to a certain degree.
Yeah, and that's just good writing as well. And I think the way the film is, you know, how Batman Returns is, allows the Catwoman, it needs that kind of Catwoman to have that kind of edge to her. Having the Catwoman from The Dark Knight Rises, like you say, compared to this, she was extremely tame. It wouldn't work. However good Anne Hathaway was, you know, for this film, it needed Michelle Pfeiffer at her sassiest, and she is the defining Catwoman.
She is. And again, you know, speaking just towards Batman, we get this kind of, not only is he in the background, but he's also back to his detective roots in this. He's really, and we don't get too much of the detective work, but we see him actively pursuing these villains and investigating them. And that's something that's been missing from a lot of the Batmans as well.
I agree. The Nolan trilogy did have him obviously working out certain plot points, certainly The Dark Knight, trying to find the Joker. But they were always some of the scenes I enjoyed the most, because it was Bruce Wayne, not Batman, it's Bruce Wayne doing the work and kind of going into that kind of James Bond territory, which, again, growing up, James Bond, I used to watch all of those films, so it kind of brought that spy thriller element into it, which I really enjoyed, which is true. Also, I just want to quickly add, how on earth did Michelle Pfeiffer squeeze into that cat suit?
I've always wondered that.
I thought I'd ask you for that.
Props to her for doing it, though, because I think that would be extremely uncomfortable to film in.
Yeah, I mean, how does she go to the toilet? Maybe we need to ask her and find this out.
Yeah, I think it's worth bringing her on the show at one point, you know, to ask.
Excellent. If you wouldn't mind us giving her a call in the once we go off air.
Oh yeah, you know, I've talked to her several times before. The number is in my favorites.
See that this guy's got everyone in his phone book. but yeah, going back to what you said here, it's to seeing that detective side of it, you know, really harken back to the root of what Bruce Wayne and Batman is.
Exactly. And I think along with Michelle Pfeiffer, I don't think you could have gotten anyone else for the role of the Penguin, of Oswald Cobblepot. It's just the mannerisms that DeVito is able to achieve. It is a believable performance. I mean, you can argue that some of the lines that, you know, Catwoman has for dialogue kind of take you out of that character a little bit. I don't think any of the mannerisms or any of the dialogue or the way that Danny DeVito talks in this role ever took me out of the immersion.
some of the things he said grossed me out, to be brutally honest. Hearing him say some of the stuff, I thought, ugh. But he was ridiculously mad, yeah. Grunting and perving and sleezing and drooling and shouting his way through the film after having his makeup applied for 4 hours. He's almost unrecognisable beneath all of that. And that is, again, like Catwoman, the Penguin is kind of a symbol of this film. When I think Batman Returns, it's this ridiculously crazy villain, which is not something you get nowadays. We get pretty cool villains nowadays, but not to that kind of macabre type performance that DeVito bought.
Exactly. And I think, you know, what kind of might have broke my immersion for Catwoman is just, you know, seeing Selina Kyle beforehand, right? You know, playing the secretary role for Max Schreck and everything, and you see her transition, and you kind of get that with DeVito, you know, as the Penguin, except we see, you know, his backstory when he's a child, and then we're right into the present day. So, you know, you don't really get that that background that you got kind of with Selina Kyle. And I feel like that's why his performance was pretty consistent for me, simply because that's all he was doing. He wasn't, you know, he didn't have any more on his plate to do other than be crazy. So I feel like that's kind of why my immersion wasn't broke with him. Because, you know, some of the things with Selina Kyle, you know, after she gets pushed out of the window by Max Schreck.
Great scene.
She has this kind of flip. It's this switch that kind of flips for her, and she is a completely different person, and she handles herself completely differently. And I feel like that's kind of why some of the things that she might have said kind of just took me out a little bit. But again, I think DeVito deserved that role, and I couldn't see anyone else portraying the Penguin from now on.
No, just imagine anyone else trying to pull that off. Yeah, when we first meet him, other than when he's thrown into the sewer, the first sort of shots of him in the silhouette are this kind of grotesque madman. So that's how we're introduced. And though when we first meet him, he says he just wants to be accepted. He wants to find out who his parents are. You know, he wants to live a normal life as much as he can do. And as like I mentioned earlier, it's actually Shrek's character who's planning, you know, to do the evil deeds and uses him and kind of corrupts him more and more as we go along. But yeah, it's a mental performance. And the fact that they got real life penguins or to act with him is, again, practical effects guys or practical animals makes a hell of a lot of difference.
It really does. And even, you know, that final scene of, you know, the Penguins carrying him down that ramp into the actual water. I like you can obviously see that the Penguins aren't moving him at all. But because there are real penguins there, you kind of, you know, you're not suspending your disbelief as much as, you know, you would probably have to with other movies.
Yeah, I'd imagine nowadays they'd be CGI penguins and they probably wouldn't look that great. But there's three things which made me smile was, the penguins were given their own trailer, so they had their own icebox to frolic around in. The second thing was a lot of baby penguins were created during that film, but apparently they were having such a good time that they all decided to mate. And thirdly, there was a story about, at the end of the day, all of the mechanical penguins were being taken away to storage, and one of the live penguins was snuggled up against one of the mechanical ones, having a sleep and cuddling one, which I'm not too manly to say softens my heart.
It sure does. Again, just the dedication that the whole production team had making this movie. You're talking about set, you're talking about practical effects. It was all on point in that department for me. And it holds up really well. I was actually kind of surprised, you know, for a film that came out in 1992, which, by the way, this was actually the first film get the Dolby Digital treatment, actually. Nice. So you had sound, you know, that became an integral part of, you know, the movie going experience and the theater experience, you know. That's like the main step that, you know, that's like the final step for immersion, you know. Once you have the sound, you're good to go. And so, you know, you have that whole element brought into this movie. And I just think as far as production value goes, this is probably one of the best, you know, Batman films. But, you know, again, I think I would argue that it's probably one of the best comic book movie adaptations that we've ever gotten.
That's a very big statement, and not one that I'm going to openly disagree with. It certainly looks the part, and there were parts, times during the movie when I was kind of thinking certain scenes or moments look like they could just spring out of a comic book, which is, you know, which is what you want. And yes, visually, the sets looked incredible. It does hold up, mainly because there are only minor moments of CGI in some parts which you may not even notice. For example, like the Batmobile, the shields are CGI. I think the Batarang was CGI. But one thing that wasn't CGI was the bird that Michelle Pfeiffer put into her mouth, which is dedication and also lunacy to put a live bird in your mouth.
Yeah, it shows you just how dedicated she was to that role, though. Yeah. You know, I mean, really. And that's why I think I like this movie so much. You know, like, imagine reading this on a script and trying to figure out how this would work on screen. There are so many things here that could have gone so wrong at any point during the movie. And yet they were able to somewhat pull it off. You know, I know some people kind of have a lukewarm response to this movie. A lot of people I've noticed have like recognized the film's achievement, but you know, for some people it's just too much. And I understand that, but if you're talking about what could have gone wrong in a movie and you're trying to pick out, you know, weird movies that shouldn't have worked on screen at all, this would definitely be one of those.
Yeah, it's definitely not kid friendly. I think in the United Kingdom, it's a 15 certificate, which would be an R, I think, in the States. It's definitely not kid-friendly, but then, to be honest, neither was the original Batman, I don't think, particularly.
No.
And I can imagine a lot of parents would have taken their kids to the cinema to watch this film and, you know, probably been a bit upset about what they were seeing, because, like I say, Batman is wantonly killing people, blowing them up and setting them on fire whilst grinning, which, for us adults, you know, might look cool, even if it is completely against the ethos and character of Batman. But yeah, then there's the sexual references, and by God, it's all over the film. Every time Penguin is on the scene, on set, there is, you know, it's just sexual references here and there. Whenever Catwoman's on set, it's all over. Whenever all three of them, including Batman, are on set, it's almost like a spoken word orgy. It's, you know, it's in your face, and having to explain that to a kid in 1992, I can imagine would have had some red-faced parents back then.
Oh, most definitely. You know, even today, I feel like you would still run into that. Actually, the film is PG-13 here in the States.
Okay.
And I looked at that rating and I kind of questioned that for a moment, because even like today, you know, with how desensitized, you know, you hear about people talk all the time about how everyone's so, you know, desensitized to violence and everything like that. And for this movie to have a PG-13 rating way back then, that says something, you know? And it's the only sequel that Tim Burton actually came back to do him and direct himself.
That's right, yes.
Yes, which I thought, you know, just looking back on everything that he's done, I'm actually kind of surprised that this was the project that he wanted to continue.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because Tim Burton isn't a man to do a sequel. And this film, Batman Returns, I know he didn't intend to be a direct sequel to the original, whereas the first draft of the screenplay, it was a complete sequel. It had plenty of references to Jack Nicholson's Joker. Vicky Vale was going to be back in it. It was basically going to tie in completely. So, along with Michael Keaton's massive paycheck, one of the things he lobbied for was that the film kind of stood alone by itself. So, it was a follow-up rather than a sequel. So, it was interesting here that he picked this particular film to have done that with.
Yeah. So, I know you mentioned Danny Elfman's score here, which I thought was done beautifully, and that is another strong element. You know, you talk about the opening sequence, the score here is noticeable, and I didn't realize how much I actually liked that score until I watched it, you know, before we, you know, recorded this.
Agreed.
yeah, I completely forgot just how amazing that score was. And for this movie, for how dark it is and everything, that score can be playful and haunting at the same time.
I totally agree, and it sounds almost silly to say this, but the score fits the scenes and the mood perfectly, which is what a score needs to do. But in this sense, in this instance, it really does. It never feels out of place. It never feels manipulative or OTT. It just helps lend this, again, weird, ethereal atmosphere to the film. I didn't realise how engaged and how much I enjoyed this score. And of course, that opening scene grabbed me and didn't let me go, because the score is perfect in that scene. But there's so many moments during the film when it elevates scenes which, you know, without that score, would they have been as good? Who knows? But, you know, that's the sign. That's how you know a composer is on his A-game, when they can create music which evokes just as much as what's happening on screen.
Exactly. Did anything stand out to you as far as, like, makeup and outfits go? I know we talked about setting a little bit. How did you feel about that stuff?
Thankfully, I liked it, because I know the Academy did, because they nominated it, I think, for the best effects and best makeup. Obviously, the penguin's makeup, you can't not mention that first, because that is a complete transformation from the fat suit they got Danny DeVito to wear, to the sort of aviary type nose, to the black mouthwash they made him put, they had in his mouth, so he's dribbling and spitting that out. Mm-hmm. That is superb. Even how Christopher Walken's character looks, because you can see it's Christopher Walken, but they've made him look like a mad professor from the 1930s. So I really enjoyed that. Again, Catwoman. I preferred her in suit, not for any reason other than, like you say, out of suit. Yeah, the change wasn't, you know, as captivating as it maybe could have been. But in terms of makeup, yeah, absolutely. I liked them. I liked the clown gang. They weren't as terrifying or as engaging as Jack Nicholson's Joker, but of course they were never meant to be or never going to be. But I thought they looked great. The different designs for each of the clown gang were fantastic. How about you?
Yeah, the first two things for me, when I talk about, you know, like outfits and makeup for this, obviously I think of the penguin. And then I go to Max Schreck's clothing. Mm-hmm. It's not even his hair, you know, that white hair, that white poofy hair. it's his pinstripe suits with the black leather gloves, and it gets me every time. And then, you know, you kind of contrast Michelle Pfeiffer, you know, Selena Kyle's clothing before, you know, she has that switch to Catwoman, and she's wearing very light clothing and, you know, mm-hmm. everything, you know, she's kind of ditzy. And I think that speaks well to this movie as well, because you have some scenes, you know, particularly when, you know, Oswald is running for office and, you know, we get some of the campaign room mm-hmm. setting and in there, it's kind of bright. But what kind of dims out that light just a little bit is what the people are wearing. And so I thought in those moments, in those lighter moments, the outfits stood out really well.
Tonally, you have the white snow and this kind of fantasy-like atmosphere, but everybody is dressed in dark clothing other than Selena Kyle. Everybody seems to be in dark, gloomy, depressing colours for the most part, and yeah, it is a real tonal argument between the natural sort of weather aspects and what people are wearing and what they bring to it. So that's a fantastic point.
Yeah, exactly. And so for me, I think that's another one of my favourite aspects of the film.
We haven't mentioned yet, but I think this may also be one of the coolest bat suit.
Yeah, and that bat suit, it was 55 pounds for Michael Keaton to wear, you know, filming.
And he still couldn't turn his neck.
Yeah. But I mean, you can kind of see that discomfort. That was my only complaint about the bat suit. It did look at times uncomfortable for him to be in. And I think that they could have loosened that up a bit, because the way his body is moving sometimes just doesn't seem natural. Completely right and natural. Yeah. I'm not saying that it has to be, you know, the most natural that it could possibly be, because even in Nolan's trilogy, you know, that was just recent, you know, Batman never moves in a way that's natural. But here you could definitely tell that it was weighing him down.
Yeah, it's certainly not fluid. But if I offered you $11 million to wear that suit for a film, are you going to take it?
Oh, of course. I'm no hesitation yeah. for me. You can add 10 pounds on. It's all good.
Yeah, you can put me in a fatter suit, and I'm taking okay. that $11 million. But I can't take my mind off those visuals. It's something about how that movie looks is what, even though I hadn't seen it for a decade and a half or whatever it may be, I hadn't forgotten how the film made me feel when I watch it. And by that I mean, like you've just mentioned with the tones, everything seems so Tim Burton, so gothic, so kind of gloomy, but it's offset against this sort of really fantasy-like snowy setting. And I keep going back to that in my mind, because that's probably my biggest takeaway from the film. If not the characters, then just how they constructed Gotham City to look like a city that isn't of this world, can I say?
Yeah, exactly. I can't speak, you know, speak to how good the outfits and the costuming and the setting was for this movie, because it was on another level. You know, I always think back to, you know, other movies that I've seen recently, you know, comic book movies, Ant-Man, mm-hmm. you know, movies like that, even Justice League. And visually, ugh. They just don't strike me the same way that this one did for some yeah. reason. And I don't know if it was because I watched it when I was, you know, growing up, or what it was, or if it's that just visually stunning. And, you know, the contrasts that are made in that movie alone are worth, you know, watching it again.
Yeah, and there's that great scene in kind of the middle of the movie where they're at the main characters at the ball, Max Rex Christmas ball, and the only two characters not wearing masks are Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle, where everybody else is wearing their dress-up masks. But yeah, there's a fantastic scene here where the only two who are finally able to not wear masks are the two who pretty much spend their alter ego lives wearing the masks. And that is a fantastic contrast scene that jumped out to me straight away when I saw it recently.
Yes, that did. And they also have a couple of lines of dialogue about not wanting to wear masks yes. anymore. That whole interaction between them, it works, and it kind of sets up the ending a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. when he finds her cat, and then, you know, he knows that she's out there somewhere. And I just think that that moment particularly captured their relationship in this movie more so than probably any other scene. The dinner scene, you know, any of their interactions, that was the strongest for me.
Yeah. Also at that party, there was one guy just furiously headbanging in the background, which really caught my eye. But
I did not.
What did you think
that.
About? Go back and watch it. Just as the scene starts, there's one guy who's literally just headbanging till his neck falls off, and it's only on for about 2 seconds. But you think, what were you on during that scene? But just you mentioned the ending. What did you think about the ending? How not the actual final scene, because that's a different story, but how the movie ended in its big climactic moment. Did you enjoy that? Did it fit?
So you're talking about not the ending, but you mean like the final like fight, the act?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I liked it. For me, that's where I kind of felt that it kind of took a turn. It felt kind of chaotic and sporadic to me almost, mm-hmm. just a little bit. You know, some of the scene transitions and scene cuts were kind of done in a way that kind of broke that immersion that I've been talking about this whole time for me, and kind of threw me out a little bit. But other than that, I liked the way they wrapped up all of the characters' storylines. So that is the one good thing that came out of the ending for me.
Yes, the only thing I didn't particularly enjoy was how the Penguin was dealt with. I thought he was kind of offed in a slightly, I don't want to say lame, but soft way I know he himself wasn't a superhero. He needs to have a big, massive death. But I guess maybe actually just it fits the film, the way he was just sort of pushed through the roof, the window, and fell to his death, essentially. Then got up, staggered towards the Batman, and collapsed. Maybe that fits the tone of the film, that he wasn't given some extravagant, bombastic ending. So maybe I've just... thinking about it, maybe that was actually a brilliant way to get rid of him. But I see what you mean about the... how it was... It was slightly choppy in its editing, and it did feel slightly rushed. How Max Schreck says in... I quite enjoy the line, "Bruce Wayne, why are you dressed as Batman?" Which got me every time. I laughed my ass off of that.
Yeah, I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah, then Max knows who Bruce Wayne is. Selina Kyle knows who Bruce Wayne is. Ah, now we need to try to find a way where they're both not around anymore to work. and then the way they, you know, in the characters was a bit rushed, I agree.
Yeah, and you know, so that's, yeah, that exactly. That speaks to the movie, I think, just the whole plot of the movie. Centering around the Penguin. We get a final moment, not necessarily with the Penguin, but we get it with Max Schreck, you know? Mm-hmm. He's kind of that central antagonist in the end yet again. And the Penguin does kind of get sidelined. But again, I wish that they could have still done something a little bit more with the Penguin. I just feel like, kind of like you were saying, I feel like there is a better way to wrap up his story in a neat little bow. Maybe it didn't have to, but they almost kind of did wrap up Max Schreck's story in kind of a neat mm-hmm. little bow, you know, and we didn't get that for the Penguin. And that's who you start the film with. So I think that's why it kind of is juxtaposed a little bit for me. We started with the Penguin and we're not ending with the Penguin. And so that kind of seems off to me as far as storytelling goes. But again, aside from the whole ending, how do you feel about the final shot?
I didn't like it. Yeah, I thought it was unnecessary. I'm not sure why it was put in there, because the ending, whilst it was slightly sloppily done, it did, you know, it was a concrete end. Whilst mm-hmm. you only did see Max Schreck's electrocuted corpse, you didn't see Selina Kyle, but you didn't need to. But having her leap up at the end when the bat signal's in the air, I didn't think it was necessary. And obviously, in the light of the fact that she's never ever mentioned again in the subsequent horrible follow-ups, if you can call them that, but I didn't see the need for it. How about you?
I didn't see the need for it. I didn't mind it as much. I would have mm-hmm. rather them ended with Michael Keaton, you know, picking up her cat and just kind of and taking care of the cat. I thought that was a nice kind of wrap up, and I feel like that could have been cut off right there, and the movie probably would have worked a little bit better as far as an ending goes. However, that last shot I didn't mind too much. I'm glad that they felt the need to show you Catwoman again. And I feel, again, Michelle Pfeiffer's performance is probably why I didn't mind that final shot so much. Just because it's, you know, one last glimpse at her Catwoman. And for me, I kind of liked it. I didn't dislike it or anything, but I'm not going to say that it's one of those, you know, final shots in a movie where my jaw's on the ground or anything like that, because it isn't and it wasn't.
Yeah, I think had they shown Bruce Wayne with the cat in the cab at the end of the film, and then had a somewhat more subtle allusion to the fact that she's still alive, I don't know what they could have done, but just something to show that she was still out there. Maybe her apartment door opening in a silhouette. I don't know, but something not quite as on the nose and, you know, striking as what they used, because it felt like it was thrown in at the very last minute. But
yes,
in terms of seeing the character again, of course you'd want to see her again, because she was fantastic as an actor, as a performance, but also as a character. You always want to see the best characters on screen. However, I kind of felt like, even though the way she was dealt with in the end, how they killed her off, was potentially rushed or not the best, it did give that kind of ending closure to her story. And having that last scene, it didn't kind of take anything away from that, you know, climactic duel before, because if you were to count, she did still have one life left. But I think it was the execution, more possibly, more than the fact that it was in there. Had they had a more subtle nod to the fact that she was still alive, I wouldn't have had a problem with it.
Well, here's the thing. What I was thinking about when I was watching the ending, and I hadn't got to that final shot yet, I actually had forgotten about that final shot.
So, yeah, exactly. Same here.
I thought that I was going to see her silhouette because the camera was focusing, you know, when Michael Keaton's in the back seat of the car, he's off to the left side, and you're seeing out that back window. I thought, in my mind, I remembered seeing Catwoman's silhouette in the background as they're driving away. And I feel like that probably would have been a better route to go as far as the final shot.
Yep, yeah, that would have been much better, I think, because it just wouldn't have been so in your face or so out of place as well. Because, I don't know, something about it just didn't feel right, the way she just emerged from the bottom of the screen. It just, it also felt like a different actress playing it, even though you could only see her from behind. It didn't feel like Michelle Pfeiffer's performance. But I would have preferred, yeah, like you say, something like that, the silhouette in the background or the kind of out of focus shot would have been just great. Just something to maybe say, look, guys, she's out there somewhere. But the way it was executed and the visual style of it just didn't hit for me.
Yeah, so as far as, you know, your opinion goes, do you think this movie had any significant impact on the way that Batman's portrayal has been recently and or just comic book movies in general?
I think it had an impact on the next two films because, as we alluded to earlier on, this film and the previous Batman were more mature, grown-up films than perhaps the studio would have wanted. Because obviously before that, you only really had the sort of Adam West-type Batman, the family-friendly, campy version. And then you had this kind of gritty Keaton version with Jack Nicholson's Joker and now the Penguin scaring kids left, right and centre. So the studio has released Batman and Robin and Batman Forever, which are two wildly different movies from Batman and Batman Returns. So it had a massive impact on the perception of Batman. And those two films I just mentioned almost killed the character, I think, which then obviously laid a foundation for Batman Begins, which was like a rebirth of the character. And since then, it's gone from strength to strength. I don't like Batman being in Justice League or Batman vs. Superman simply because those films are not very good. But I did like Ben Affleck's performance, just as I enjoyed Christian Bale's performance. So I think what the main impact it had was it damn near killed the cinematic career of Batman, but it inadvertently led to the rebirth and the fantastic Christopher Nolan trilogy.
I would agree with you. And, you know, another thing with Batman, it also paved the way, you know, for that heavy focus on you know, villains in comic book movies. You know, you had Jack Nicholson's Joker previously, and they did an incredible job with that performance. I'm sure we'll talk about that at some point. But you know, you kind of had these strong villains, and I think the weak point of the two Batman films after this one was that the villains just weren't as fleshed out as they could have been. And Batman too, I understand that different actors are going to, you know, kind of portray Batman in a different way. But I think Michael Keaton just did such a good job that it was kind of hard to top that for anyone that came after that.
Yeah, Michael Keaton spoiled it for everybody else by being so good. But he not just as Batman, but I think he was great at Bruce Wayne. Michael Keaton of the late 80s and early 90s had that kind of, he still has now, had that sort of charm and appeal and charisma to pull off the Bruce Wayne side of it, a kind of seductive, smarmy charm, if you will, that Bruce Wayne had. And Keaton could do that. And yes, Bale could do it and Ben Affleck could do it, but Keaton did it brilliantly, and he also nailed being Batman as well. So he has ruined it for everybody else trying, I think. Because for me, like I said, he is Batman. But also this movie made quite a bit of money, but not as much as the original Batman. So it did actually hold the opening weekend record. I think it was taken over by Jurassic Park the next year. But it made $45.5 million on its opening weekend, which obviously nowadays looks like, doesn't sound that much, but whack that up for inflation, it sounds a bit better. So it was anticipated when it came out. So in terms of the impact when it came out, Batman Fever was huge after the first film, because that made a lot of money, the first film. It made nearly $1 billion. It made about, I think, $800 odd million overall. Whereas this film didn't. It made $267 million worldwide. That last figure, by the way, that's with inflation. But this Batman Returns made $267 million worldwide. It was the third biggest film of the year, behind Aladdin and Home Alone 2. It fell short of that first Batman, which, as I was saying, was, I think that's why the studio decided to go for the Joel Schumacher route, to try and get more bums in seats and try and make a bit more money. Because whilst it made a lot of money, it didn't make as much as the first Batman. So impact-wise, I think that's why the studio went for that kind of more, I don't want to say fun, because the subsequent films weren't fun to sit through, but they were that kind of more light-hearted approach.
Right, right. And yeah, and you know, say what you will about those villains from those movies, I still get a kick out of them. You know, I laugh.
Mr. Freeze.
And cool. You know, Poison Ivy was just, I think they were trying to replicate Catwoman a bit too much there. And I think that's absolutely why that character didn't go the way it probably should have. But, you know, you can speak to the impact just nowadays with movies. We've already kind of touched on the fact that a lot of these movies now are villain-centric. You know, I know that when Marvel came out of the gate with the MCU, their villains weren't bad by any means, but they were just kind of, you know, lackluster a little bit almost.
Yeah.
And recently they've really picked up their game, because in superhero movies, for me, the superhero, whoever it may be, Batman, Superman, is only as good as the villain.
Yes,
absolutely. If you don't have a great villain, you know, backing your movie, then what is your hero really fighting for? Who is your hero really fighting? And I feel like that's why Batman Returns is as good as it is.
Yeah, I've mentioned it on plenty of shows before, and I believe on the wonderful interview we had together a few months ago, that the MCU's reliance on, you know, focusing more on the hero can at times be a detriment, because they've got some awesome villains, which, as has now been highlighted with Thanos, once they're put in the spotlight, actually create a very compelling narrative. And these older comic book movies did that so well. I mean, the original one with the Joker, the amount of screen time they had, and they created this big villain, it worked. The Penguin, Catwoman, a double-headed villain, it worked. Coming forward, of course, Heath Ledger's Joker, that's why that film was such a superb film. Mainly because the villain was so incredible. And I totally agree with your assessment that the villains make the movie. It sounds, or they empower the hero more, because it's true, without that strong villain to play off, what are the stakes? What is the hero fighting for if you don't believe in the villain?
Exactly. And, you know, I remember reading a report somewhere. Jack Nicholson apparently had advised Danny DeVito, like he was like, you know, trying to get him to take the role of the Penguin, just because of his success with the previous Batman. And I could only imagine if Jack Nicholson wasn't able to successfully convince Danny DeVito to take that role. I just wonder, you know, I don't feel like the movie would have been altered all that much, but I feel like that performance wouldn't have been as strong and powerful. And you needed that, especially when, you know, a movie takes risks like this one does. Yes. Because it does. It's not a mainstream superhero movie. There are going to be large amounts of people who are turned off by everything almost in the movie. And so you needed to kind of, you know, almost kind of like put people on a different path in a way of thinking that, Yes, I know this movie is over the top and kind of out of place sometimes, but the villains are incredible. And so that's what makes the movie good.
Yeah, and people all over the movieverse are call for superhero films to be less formulaic, if you will, or take a different approach. And this is exactly what Batman Returns does. It is, it's wacky. It's, at times, it's absolutely bonkers, but it still stays true to its roots of being in that kind of comic book universe. But it takes risks, like you say. It's a completely different kind of film to what we're used to now. So if anybody out there hasn't seen this film, sorry, we've probably ruined the whole thing for you, but you know, it is a different experience to what you're used to. Some things never change. Warner Brothers, they had to tighten the setup because there's so much interest from, you know, the public after the first Batman. They had private investigators roaming the set because some shots were leaked to the press of Danny DeVito in his costume. So some things never change. Obviously, we see leaked fit pictures from Captain Marvel, from Shazam, from Infinity War, from you name it. So some things never change. So I guess that also plays into the impact that obviously people were clamoring for more, for as much information as they could get, that even then there were people taking candid shots. So it took risks, and I think at the time it made a big impact, maybe not the way the studio wanted, but I think in time it's been seen as, you know, it's kind of come out of the shadows a bit more and been accepted into the family, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of a sleeper hit. So is this a movie for you that you're going to go back and check out multiple times? Or is this one of those movies that, like, you can watch it, like, once every 15 years and be good?
I don't think I'd leave it 15 years to watch it again. There are some films which I'll watch multiple times during a year, and I'll never get bored of it. This is a kind of film which I would certainly watch again. There's no doubt about that. How often is a different story? And again, it's not because I didn't enjoy the film. I did enjoy it. But to me, it didn't have that rewatchability where I'd be rushing back to put it on in the next week or two. It would be a while before I watched it again. But if somebody asked me to recommend this film, absolutely I'm going to recommend to watch it for all the reasons we've just mentioned. And I think I know what you're going to say as well.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely worth at least one watch. If you have never seen Batman Returns before, it's one of those movies that if you are, you know, just a casual fan of superhero movies, it's definitely probably going to shock your system a little bit. But, you know, I think the thing with this movie is there's so much to take in after you are done watching it. And there's a lot to think about. And I feel like that alone is worth watching it at least once. Definitely probably going to be a movie that I check out every couple of years. I don't know that I'm going to be throwing it on every month, but it definitely, it's rewatchable for me in small doses, if you will.
Is it a Christmas film?
I'm going to say it is. Yes, I'm going to say it is.
I think it is. I'm probably not going to put it on over the festive period too much because it may dampen my enthusiasm for Christmas, but I would definitely say it's a Christmas film. Also wanted to mention quickly, this film has got some just mad, sort of crazy moments in it. You've got, some of them are of their time. You have Michelle Pfeiffer using the phrase stupid corn dog, which is in 2018, just takes me to a different generation. You've got Father Christmas, Santa Claus, being whacked with a chair by one of the circus gang, which young me would have been devastated at. Catwoman slices a guy's face. I can only imagine the Penguin learned to read and write from what was being flushed into the sewer, because I realised whilst I was watching it that he was thrown into the sewers and then grew up fluent in English and able to read and write. So I'm not sure quite how he learned to do any of that, but I'm going to put that down to the Penguins somehow taught him how to read and write. And there's also a great moment in it for the first time when Michael Keaton puts the suit on. The bat signal is in the air. You can see it coming through the window of the mansion. And then, similar to the end shot with Catwoman, Batman appears on screen in front of the symbol, and it's one of those awesome kind of fist bump moments, punch the air moments. So, there are any off the top of your head, can you think of any kind of kookier moments that stand out?
Oh, the whole scene when Selina Kyle comes back to her apartment after being pushed out of the window by Max Schreck, and she's just knocking lamps over, and she's saying the weirdest stuff, and, you know, she's drinking milk out of the carton. That whole scene to me is probably my favorite Selina Kyle like moment that I've ever seen or heard about. You know, I'm not the biggest like comic book reader, so I don't read a whole lot. But for me, that scene really I laugh every time I watch it. And that is one of the few scenes too that I do remember from my childhood. And I vividly remembered that scene before even, you know, watching it for recording the show. So that scene alone, everything about it.
Yeah, and that actually gave a reason for that neon writing to be on the wall where it said, it turned to hell here, I think it changed to, when she whacked it with her stiletto, hello there, I think it said. When it first saw it, I remember when I rewatched it thinking that's a strange thing to have on the wall. And then when she comes in after having her finger nibbled on and resurrected by a cat, when she whacks that sign, then I thought, okay, as a visual, it looks good. Even if it makes no sense, it looks good.
Yeah, yeah, and the whole line. I think my favorite line from the movie was, "Honey, I'm home. Oh, I forgot, I'm not married."
Yeah,
just the delivery of that. Yeah, it just worked for me. I don't know.
Yeah, some of the Penguin's quotes are too blue to air, but they were in the soundbite beforehand. But I think that moment when, at the end, when Christopher Walken, Max Schreck, does say, "Bruce Wayne, why are you dressed as Batman?" Only because that's probably my favourite line of the film, because it made me laugh, and also because it just felt so weirdly out of place that he's just shooting, pumping lead into Catwoman, who's staring towards him, walking towards him, bleeding out, and the first thing he can think of to say is, "Why are you dressed as Batman?" in this sort of matter-of-fact, strange way. And the way she reacts is just a sort of bizarrely lovely moment in the film. But there are a lot of great scenes in this film. If I'm going to put you on the spot, because I'm sure I'm going to do the same, if you could, if you're going to give one moment of the film, which is your standout moment, what's that?
Oh, one standout moment. I honestly, for me, the whole scene, interaction with Max Schreck and Selina Kyle, when he's kind of, you know, about ready to push her out of the window, that scene for me, just the joking that occurs between the two of them, you know, she's terrified, and yet, you know, as she's backing up towards the window, he has that, you know, brief pause where he's like, "Oh, I'm just kidding," you know, and then he pushes her out of the window. And every time that, you know, I replay that scene, it's one of those scenes that I don't feel is dull. And I definitely feel like Christopher Walken definitely stood out to me in that moment. And that's probably why. That's one of the few moments in the films, along with, you know, the one that you had mentioned at the end. That's the reason why I don't feel like his character is so out of place.
Yeah, I agree. That scene is, yeah, it's unsettlingly well performed, I think. And visually, again, I keep mentioning that with the V word, visually, but when she's thrown out the window, sort of that moment where her head just thwacks against those three cloths protruding from the side of the building, you know, closed up on her face, is such a, you know, quite a shocking, well done shot before she like plummets to the ground. Mm-hmm. I think the whole scene is so brilliantly done. I was going to say that was probably my standout as well. Another one is when Penguin bites the guy's nose when he's questioning his appearance, and he kind of bites his nose and spurts his blood everywhere and shows what an absolute maniac he is. And another one is when Penguin overrides the Batmobile controls and basically takes it on a joyride around Gotham, just tearing into people, which again in this day and age is quite strange to see any car just rampaging through people, let alone older people as well. But that was another standout. It's just to show just how crazy the villain is, that he's laughing and squealing his way as basically he's running people over willy-nilly.
Yeah, that's actually, for me, that's one of the few scenes, particularly just the way he's like acting. I don't think that it was completely over the top, but I do think that that is the one instance in the movie where I kind of like sort of questioned why he would, you know, be doing those things. I mean, he is a madman, yes, but I think it was just the way that he was acting was just complete, like in that moment, just batshit crazy. And and it worked. And you know, Danny DeVito again was able to pull it off. And I can't say anything bad about his performance. So
yeah, I think the only thing you could say was he was just having a hell of a lot of fun. Some people may misconstrue it as, it's wrong to say that. Some people may see it as over the top. Some may not like the crudeness of it. For me, it fit the tone of the movie. Put that character in another comic book movie, it's not going to work. It's going to be awful. In the context of this film, spot on. But I've forgotten just how sort of menacing and well acted that character really was.
Mm-hmm. We definitely should be thanking Tim Burton, because again, you took this, you know, you take this film from, you know, a script to screen with any other director, and I don't know that it's going to work as well as it did.
No, I think that goes for all of the characters in the film as well. It was, the characters were all spot on. It looked great. It sounded great. Some of the story beats didn't quite work for me. Like we've mentioned, with the ending didn't really work, and the way the potentially all the main characters were dealt with, the very end shot didn't work. There were other moments during the film which I was watching but wasn't as engaged with. Some of the dialogue threw me off a bit, because even for this old grump, some of it was a bit too much. But on the whole, yeah, you know, it, like you say, it took risks. It knew what it was doing. It may have been completely out there, but it never felt too out there, if that makes sense.
I totally agree. I will say, on a quick note, I think the one character interaction that I didn't really care for was when Catwoman goes to visit the Penguin. I think mm-hmm. that's the moment where, you know, people might think it's too much. You know, yeah. I'm not saying that I thought it was too much necessarily, but I could see the argument, you know, being made that whole scene was too much for some.
Yeah, it gave us that great moment with the bird in the mouth, but mm-hmm. other than that, it was, yeah, that was one of those scenes where just watching it didn't really feel much. If I can see what you mean, it could be seen as too much, other people might just not dislike it, or the sort of the apparent sexual nature of the scene, even though there wasn't any sexual chemistry. But yeah, that was one of the scenes which didn't entirely click for me, other than the, you know, the awesome scene with the bird in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the bird in the mouth thing, I think I was actually, okay, so I was actually watching it with my girlfriend, who had never seen Batman Returns. And yeah, she's an animal lover. So they were, you know, the camera was focusing on that bird pretty heavily. And so she knew what was coming. But just to see someone that hadn't seen the movie before react to that whole interaction, I think that's kind of where I gauged, you know, where some parts of the movie didn't work compared to the others.
Yeah, I guess if you're lucky enough to go back and watch it with for the first time, like your girlfriend did, then partly she's a very lucky girl for being able to do that. And secondly, in this day and age, it would be interesting to see how somebody reacts. My exhilarating partner, she watched it years ago, and she actually likes this film. She doesn't really like comic book films, but she did like this film. Whether or not she'd like it now is a different story. But it does sort of speak volumes how different people react based on, you know, what they like and what they feel or believe. But it's interesting that you managed to sit down with your girlfriend and have her watch it for the first time. Did she like the film overall? Coming from somebody who hasn't seen it.
She did. She was pleasantly surprised. I didn't tell her who it was directed by. And one of her favorite movies of all time is actually Nightmare Before Christmas. Oh, and Yeah, and so she was instantly able to pick up. She asked, like, she turned to me during the movie, and she was like, "Is this Tim Burton?" And I was like, "Ah, see, it's unmistakable. Like, even if you barely know any of his body of work, like, you'll be able to pinpoint it." And she did like it. She was surprised at Batman a little bit, just blowing people up and, you know, setting people on fire. That was kind of, I think that threw her off a little bit. But other than that, I mean, yeah, overall, she liked it.
It was interesting that you mentioned that, being able to pick out the fact that it's Tim Burton, because it's something that we mentioned earlier on, but it is so just dribbling in Tim Burton's visuals. But yes, you've got yourself a keeper there. If she enjoyed this film and also recognised it as a Tim Burton film, so well done on selecting your girlfriend.
Oh yeah, thank you for that.
That's all right. You've got the seal of approval from over across the pond. Okay, we have just gone through this, but before we wrap up, Batman Returns. Are you going to recommend this to somebody if they've never seen it, or are you going to tell them to give it a miss?
Oh, most definitely recommend, 100%.
And I'm going to agree with you. I will watch it every few years like yourself, and I would tell people to recommend it, to watch it for morbid curiosity, and also because it is a pretty good film, let's face it.
It really is. It's like I said, this might even be in my top 10 favorite comic book movies of all time. Just throwing that out there. And I think because it's so different from everything else that I've seen before, I think that's why it kind of stands out on its own.
I can't argue that. And as these shows come out thick and fast every month, there is going to be, obviously, the more we do, it's going to become apparent which ones are our favourites, and we're going to end up kind of ranking which film we prefer. Did we prefer this to the last episode and blah, blah. So that's going to be interesting to see, because one thing the comic book genre does do very well is it does mix up its tones quite well. So you do get different types of films, because, for example, we've mentioned Batman Returns. How would that stack up against Avengers Assemble? How would that go against Spawn, Hellboy, maybe one of the original Batman Forever? There's so many different tones and styles of film in this genre that it could become, by the end of the year, where I'm already thinking that far ahead, it could be an interesting discussion as things get further and further into the comic book genre.
Yeah, I've never actually hashed out, you know, where all my favorite comic book movies stand. So it'll definitely be interesting for me to see. And, you know, when I revisit some of these movies that I haven't checked out in several years, you know, just to see how I feel about them, you know, now compared to then. And then, you know, seeing where they stack up as far as, you know, like you said on the next episode, you know, am I going to like that movie better than I like Batman Returns? Who knows?
Yep, I can't wait. The beauty of this as well is, what we're trying to do is, we don't tell each other before the show what we think about the film. So we'll go and revisit it. You know, we'll sit down, we'll hash it out, we'll do our research, whatnot. But I don't know what Jared thinks about these films, so I didn't know what he thought about Batman Returns. He doesn't know what I think about it, literally, until we get rolling. So it could be a case of the next episode or one after that. I could, you know, there could be a real conflict. Jared might hate it, I might love it, vice versa. It seems we're kind of on the same level of Batman Returns. We both recommend it. Certain parts I was more hot on, other parts Jared preferred. But that's the beauty of doing these kind of shows, is that differing opinion, because it would be a bit boring if we all thought the same thing.
That is right. That is the beauty of film critiquing and reviewing, you know, just hearing everyone's different opinions. My favorite case in recent memory was The Last Jedi. Of course, that's a discussion for another day. But just to, you know, just to kind of touch on that a little bit, just seeing where people, you know, feel after certain years, you know, especially when we're talking about movies that have been out for some time. But even just new movies, you know, just the differing opinions is what makes it fun and exciting. So,
yeah. Imagine if Batman Returns had come out, in, you know, this year or last year. Imagine in the world that we now live in and the social media frenzy, imagine how this film would have been taken in 2018.
Oh, not well. I do not think well at all.
Yeah. If you mentioned The Last Jedi being divisive, then imagine this coming out as the next Batman film. I can only imagine how long it would take before Twitter or Facebook or whatever melted.
Oh, it wouldn't take that long at all. Matter of hours. Minutes, maybe, even at this point.
Yeah, there'd be people claiming to have seen it before it's even finished in the world we live in now. Well, the next episode, we don't know how we're going to react, so the next episode could be a divisive fight. We could be brawling on the air, but that's coming in the next month episode. So that was for this very, very first episode of Comicast, and I hope you all enjoyed our discussion about Batman Returns, because I know I did, and I certainly hope you did too, Jared.
Oh, yeah, I always enjoy talking about these things. It's nice, you know, I don't a lot of the times, you know, a lot of my friends and family members aren't really engaged in the community all that much. So it's very rare that I get the opportunity to sit down for an hour and just nerd out about any movie, but specifically comic book movies. So it's really cool. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
No worries. Well, as I say, we will be back next month with the next show. Again, I'm not going to say what it is. It's all part of the big surprise. So thank you so much again for coming on today, Jared, my most excellent co-host. On the internet, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Burrow Reviews and on Facebook and Instagram at The Burrow Reviews, and then also on our website, theburrowreviews.com.
And you can get some merchandise on there, so check it out. If you like owls, you are in for a treat. You can find me at whatiwatchtonight.co.uk, Twitter and Instagram. Just search for What I Watch Tonight. You'll find us, find me on there. So yeah, thanks again everybody for listening. Thank you for coming on today, Jared. Show will be on, no worries, this show is going to be on iTunes, it'll be on Stitcher, Podknife, Spotify, TuneIn. It's going to be out there everywhere. If you do like what you hear, please do share it with your friends. Please do tell us if you like it, because there's nothing better than being told what you're saying is actually good. If you don't like it, just don't say anything to anyone. It's probably better if you don't. And of course, don't forget to tell your grandmothers about this brilliant show. But until next time, from me, see ya, and from him,
goodbye, guys.
Okay.